WFAE Podcasting is funded by Corporate Information Technologies, helping businesses take a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Visiting 12 countries in 12 months doesn't sound much like a What am I trying to say? I knew I was going to blow this this morning. Let me start over again. Visiting 12 countries in 12 months doesn't sound much like a vacation, and for our guest this hour, it wasn't. It wasn't intended to be. 12 and 12, as the Lewis family refers to it, was meant to expose them to other countries and cultures, to more fully understand the needs of those less fortunate, and to do something for those people. It stemmed from an innocent question posed to J.D. Lewis by his teenage son Jackson. Why do we live so well when others don't, and why don't we do more about that? I'm paraphrasing there, but you get the picture. Now, most parents would either have tried to find an answer or change the subject. J.D. Lewis came up with a bigger idea. He, Jackson, and his then 8-year-old brother, Buck, would travel the world looking for answers and helping where they could. This intrepid trio joined us last summer just before embarking on their adventure. Now they're back, hopefully with stories to tell, and they join us for the hour. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. You don't look any worse for the wear. You look well-traveled. You look well-rested.
That's because we've showered since we got back.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Now, you're 15 now. You were 14 before you left. You are 9.
I'm 9.
8 before you left.
Yes.
Where did you celebrate your 9th birthday?
I celebrated my 9th birthday in Egypt.
And where did you celebrate your 15th birthday?
Mississippi. A couple days ago.
Okay, so you after you got back, essentially. Egypt, where in Egypt?
First in Cairo, but then we went to Giza to see the pyramids.
Where were you on your birthday? What did you do for your birthday?
We went to go see the pyramids. They were amazing. We went inside them.
Wow, that's a cool present.
Yeah.
Now, when you were in the studio last year, none of you really quite knew what you were in for. I remember that. JD, you, I think, were semi-prepared.
Semi, yeah.
As prepared as a person can be for going into the unknown. You, Jackson, seemed excited.
Yeah.
Was that an accurate appraisal of it?
Yeah.
And Buck, you seemed a little worried. In retrospect, is this trip all you thought it would be, more than you thought it would be? Was it a good thing that you did it?
I think it's a good thing that we did it. Now we appreciate what we have. It's like you have to appreciate it if you don't. It's just big.
Jackson? Because this was your idea. You started all this with a question.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was definitely, I had no idea before we left. It was great. All the different countries. And it was definitely even more amazing because we actually stayed with the people who live there instead of just going to a hotel and seeing the sights. We lived with the people and experienced things that pretty much no one else gets to.
You know, we live in this interconnected world where television signals reach us instantly from all corners of the world, and we think we know what the world looks like and what people think like and what they're experiencing in their day-to-day lives. How is it that we don't, given the interconnectedness? Now, you've been there and you've experienced these things. Why is your experience so different from the casual observer who sees it on television?
Well, I think going out there and actually living amongst the people and seeing their environment, experiencing their culture, I feel like I've traveled a good bit in my youth and in my younger adulthood, and I was just amazed at what we saw. Just every different culture had so much to observe. It was really pretty incredible. And you say the interconnected thing, and it's true. You know, we actually did a remote with you folks from Tanzania. So, I mean, we all are connected. And I think the world becomes a smaller place because of technology. But, and I think this is the generation that's really going to learn more about that.
You asked this, and I paraphrased the question, Jackson, that you asked prior to this trip even becoming a reality or even a dream. What was the question again that you actually asked your father? Do you remember?
This was a long time
ago. It was a long time
ago. It was...
Or even what provoked the question. Do you remember what provoked the question?
I'm not sure. I'd been thinking about it a lot, and I kind of talked about it with some of my friends, and then I just brought it up talking to my dad, and a couple days later we started thinking about traveling and doing work, and then all of a sudden it was...
So you have this trio. You have this trio of people, Americans traveling the world to some very remote places, in some cases, some very deprived places, and you're taking all of this in and being amazed by it and emotionally involved with it, and all the adjectives that you can think of. What did they think of you? How do they figure you out? Why are you here?
I don't know. It was different in pretty much every place, and it was very different with the people just around and the people that we worked with. Mm-hmm. The people we worked with got used to us after a while, and we all became really close. But the people in the cities, just people that just saw us walking down the street, always like stared and turned around. In China, lots of them wanted pictures with us. They would like literally take Buck and drag him away for pictures because of his hair, it's so light.
Yeah, we had to get used to that. All of a sudden, families would come up and just grab Buck, and the next thing I know, I'd turn around and he was in a family picture with 12 or 15 people.
Now, you don't have exactly blonde hair. It's kind of light brown.
Right? Yeah, it changes colors by the season.
Ah, okay. So the sun affects your hair, doesn't it? Okay. When you go on any trip, things go through your mind. What could happen? What might happen? And particularly if you're an adult and you're shepherding two young people around the world into these strange quarters, you must have had worries, fears about what might happen. Did any of your worst fears materialize?
You know, we had two incidents that were fairly dangerous. For the most part, we were very lucky. We had an incredible experience, but I nearly drowned in Thailand, which was we were working with the elephants in the north of Thailand, and we went tubing down a river, and I hit a cement block of a bridge, and it took me under, and it pinned me to the bottom of the river, and I was down there for about a minute.
Oh, my gosh.
And that was a frightening experience. I woke up for about a month after that, panicked, because I thought if that had been Buck or Jack, I'm an avid swimmer. I was a surfer for years, and I learned what to do when you're getting washed out by water. And so I was able to get out, but I was pinned down there for quite a bit of time.
What goes through your mind in a situation like that? What were you thinking at the time?
All I thought about was my kids. I kept on thinking, Jack and Buck are up there, Jack and Buck are up there. And I was literally pinned to the bottom of the river against the bridge.
By the current?
By the current. And I finally managed to turn around and use my strength to get around the pillar. Mm-hmm. And when I looked up, it was black, and I thought, I'm under the bridge. I'm going to die. And by that point, I was sort of getting faint. I had run out of air, and I just dove for the surface thinking, all right, if I hit the bottom of the bridge, then I'm dead. Mm-hmm. And it was that the water was so murky that it looked black, and I came out of the water obviously gasping for air.
I'm sorry.
And they came and got me out of the water, and Buck was downstream flipping out, screaming.
I was going to ask you, what were you thinking? Under the water for a minute, long time.
It was scary. Like, it was so fast, I couldn't hold myself back so I could see him.
The river was moving. Yeah,
the river was really strong. We were halfway down river. Because he got in after us. Me and Buck went in first, and then we turn around, and there's just this tube floating down the river, and all of a sudden, Dad comes up in the middle of the water, and it was...
Now, I know that before you left, one of the things we talked about was, Buck, you were a little worried about food. Were you a picky eater before you left?
No. Yes.
Yes, certainly not a picky eater now, are you?
Oh, no. I had donkey in China.
You had what?
A donkey.
You had a donkey? You ate a donkey?
Donkey burger.
A donkey burger. Where was this?
China.
I didn't try that.
All right, I have to ask, and don't tell me chicken. What does a donkey burger taste like?
It tastes like chicken.
Oh, come on. It does not.
It did.
It didn't look like it tastes like chicken.
It did not taste like chicken.
It looked kind of gray and greasy. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I didn't try it.
And why did you eat it? Was it because you were hungry?
I was really hungry.
And
I didn't know what it was until I finished it.
Okay, so what did it taste like as you were eating it and did not know what it was?
A mixed pig with cow.
Okay, kind of pork and beef. Okay. How long was it before you actually had to try something that you either couldn't identify or you wouldn't have eaten had you been given an opportunity not to?
That was very burger. Quickly. In Russia, there was lots of mystery meat and all kinds of different.
China was, we were expecting Chinese food, and we're here to tell you that our Chinese food looks nothing like China's.
Nothing at
Chinese
all. I've heard about
soy
China.
Soy sauce is different.
I've heard about Chinese food in China. Talk to me about what it's like.
It's different. Everything, it's kind of unidentifiable. Mm-hmm. A lot of the food looks very different, and there are vegetables that are different.
I don't know. Some of it's really good, and then others like are kind of just like, what? What is this? Mm-hmm. But
they eat
mostly
bamboo.
It was good.
Does it taste like Chinese food in America? Or is
different
spices.
Completely different.
They eat bamboo. Yeah. Little bits of bamboo that look like green beans. It's amazing.
Chinese food here is just the fast food version. It's not anything like it.
And Jackson became a vegetarian due to an experience in China. We were in Shanghai, mm-hmm. and a man was walking down the street with a live cat in a grocery bag, meowing its head off. And I stood there with my two boys as he walked by. And we had never had that sort of experience before. And I kind of was sitting there going, what do? Do I save the cat, you know?
Guess
and
not.
I, what you have to do is respect their culture, and they eat things that we don't.
And, right. and we eat things that they don't.
But that sort of put Jackson over the edge.
So are you now a vegetarian? Were you only you're vegetarian right now?
Yeah, I actually decided in India, so that was, I think maybe 10 months ago, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cats. Okay.
yeah, it was.
Now, you were in Tanzania the last time we spoke. That was the day that we spent, I think, 5 or 6 minutes with you and praying that the cell phone connection wouldn't die. During that call, JD, you told us that one of the lessons that you learned was that most of the people suffering in the world are resilient and mostly happy. How do you explain that? Do you understand that better now that you've been around the world and seen people?
You know, I do. I think as Americans are raised with a lot of expectation, and I think people around the world live in the moment more. And I think that that's perhaps a recipe for happiness. I think there are a lot of challenges that they have to deal with on a daily basis. And I think living in the moment helps them to be more present and available. I think there's a great sense of community in the world. We worked in the Kibera slums in Nairobi, and I was so amazed that in that environment, people were generally happy. The kids were having a great time amongst a lot of disease and death and violence. These people are incredibly happy and have a great sense of humor, really welcoming.
Those of us who live in the first world and who benefit from all the advances of the first world look at the third world sometimes and just scratch our heads with how did that happen? How is it that we are so well off and they are so bad off, if that's the right term to use? Do you have a philosophy about that or a better understanding of that?
Even the first and third world separates us. It's the thinking. Now that we've been around the world, I don't think of it as a first world, third world thing. I think people live differently. And we have grown as Americans to expect certain things. But in that, I mean, I've worked in the industry my entire life with a lot of celebrities and people who make a lot of money. And a lot of them are depressed on antidepressants, really have a tough time because they want more, they want more, they want more. I think in a lot of these countries we visited, people are happy because they're living moment to moment, dealing with their families, you know, working with their moment-to-moment lives.
J.D. Lewis, his sons Jackson and Buck are with us. We're going to talk about their around-the-world adventures and what they did in a moment. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Center for Environmental Farming Systems, NC10% campaign, committed to building the sustainable local food economy through support of local food producers, businesses, and communities. NC10%.com. Well, entering middle school is one of those transitions in life that most of us, well, We don't remember it anymore, but if we did remember it, we possibly would recall that it was one of those milestones that we viewed with excitement and with trepidation. It's also a time in a child's life when things change developmentally and socially and emotionally. Some kids really struggle with this. They struggle with their grades, their friends, their parents. And so tomorrow, a panel of experts will join us with tips on helping your kids navigate this tough period. That's tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm show, recent accounts of near misses in the sky, ensuring the safety of air travel as traffic increases and the FAA transitions to a new control system.
Join us for the Diane Rehm show this morning at 10, right after Charlotte Talks, on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to J.D. Lewis, who along with his 15-year-old son Jackson and his 9-year-old son Buck traveled the world, 12 countries in 12 months, Russia, China, Thailand, India, Rwanda, Tanzania, Kenya, Australia, the Antarctic, which the last time I checked is not really a country, Argentina, Peru, and Haiti. We'll talk about some of those places that they went and what they experienced while they were there in the course of the rest of the time that we have together. I want to get back to this thing about happiness. American kids, teenagers, have Xboxes and iPhones and iPads and computers and big screen televisions and the movies that they go to. The big hot movie now, of course, is the Batman film. And people in the rest of the world, they don't have, a lot of people in the rest of the world don't even, they don't even know these things exist, much less have them. How can they be happy without these things?
Because they don't know about them. They don't need them. They find other things that they can do. And
so what have you learned about the things that we as Americans must have that we really don't need?
That we don't need them at all. It's unnecessary, but I don't know. I guess we're just lucky.
But don't they make life better? They do make life better. Electricity makes life better, doesn't it?
It makes it easier.
Makes it easier. Because you were in it.
Not necessarily better, but
yeah,
it does make it easier.
I would have to disagree. We lived in an incredible hut in Tanzania by the beach and lived like kings. Yeah, it was just a different experience.
Explain that, lived like kings in a hut in Tanzania. Explain that.
Well, you know, it's funny because the pressures of the world are gone, and we taught English there. The kids were in a nursery, and I taught English to adults and to teens. And we had this sort of get up every day, do our thing, teach our classes, walk down an incredible road to the beach, and hang out with these amazing people. And it was one of the most spectacular parts of the trip.
Why did they want to learn English? I mean, here are people living in huts that could be, I suppose, learning thermodynamics or electricity functions and then whatever else makes the modern world go.
Well, one of the things that's consistent with the entire world is a love for education, more so than America. I think kids have to go to school. Other kids really around the world desire to go to school. It's the most important thing to them. And kids walk 5-6 miles. When we worked in Rwanda, kids walked up a mountain 5 or 6 miles to get to school. And it was a real treat for them to be able to go. And to learn English changes the course of their life because they can work in tourism. They can work in a big city getting a job because English is the universal language. And that's something we learned as well.
You took yourselves out of school for a year, and just before we started this program, I asked you have you re-enrolled in school, and you said yes. And I said, how can you, after 12 months of traveling the world and seeing things that nobody your age and most people in the country will never see and will never experience in their entire lives, how can you go back to school? And Buck, you said we have to go back to school.
We have to. It's just if you want to tell your friends about it, I would suggest go to school.
Why? Is that something that you learned on this trip, or have you always felt that way?
I like school.
You like school?
I like school.
But Are you now a year behind where you should be, or do you? Does this
count? We did an incredible thing that I will never do again as long as I live. Called homeschooling. And for those people out there who are homeschooling their kids, my hat is off to you. God bless you.
And to the kids, you have my sympathy.
Hey, that was a tough road. Homeschooling is a tough deal.
Now, I'm interested in your reaction, Jackson. Why?
I don't know. It was just tough. First of all, it's hard when you're traveling, and especially for us because we were traveling, we were trying to do this work and then trying to go and sit down and do homework. First of all, it's hard to concentrate because
sure. You
want to be out working and with the people and experiencing where you're at, but I don't know.
And I have to say that the kids did really well because we did work long days in a lot of the locations, and then to have to sit down for a few hours and do homework. It was.
How many locations did not have electricity? So you couldn't use a computer and you couldn't use
maybe
light bulbs.
Maybe three or four of them had no electricity whatsoever. A lot of locations didn't have internet. Part of our homeschooling plan required internet. So when we were in those sort of locations, we sort of worked on the subjects that we could do without internet.
But. Now, before you left, we talked about how you intended to be blogging while you were away, and you intended to be doing video, shooting video, and doing little films of your adventures. And I believe, if I recall correctly, Buck was the guy that was going to shoulder this responsibility. And I asked you if you knew how to edit, and you said you'd learn. So tell me how that all went.
Well, we shot 300 hours of videotape, which we have quite an editing
None of it's out there yet. But
what happened was when we got on the road, we shot 14,000 pictures and 300 hours of videotape. But once we got on the road and we started to do the blogging, the experience, we were going to start doing video blogs along the way, and the experience became bigger than the editing process. I started to edit some of the videos, and I thought this is going to take up more time than, because I'm not an editor, than the work involved that we were doing.
It struck me after you left, and then also as we checked in with you periodically, that what should have happened here is that some reality TV show producer should have followed you.
We were offered that. We did. Yeah. We were offered.
Because that would have been an interesting reality show.
We had two different production companies in Los Angeles offer to do that.
Uh-huh. But it would have changed the experience.
Yes, it would.
Because
have.
Having a film crew around with you and.
But wouldn't they have disappeared after a while?
You know, we didn't want to go in and exploit a situation by saying, oh, you're an orphanage. We want to shoot. You know, I've worked in the documentary film industry, and I know that doc filmmakers are ruthless, and I didn't want to go in and have people feeling uncomfortable. And our mission truly was to live amongst the people and do our best to make a difference.
Well, let's talk about these countries that you went to. Was the first country Russia?
Yes.
Okay, so Russia, where did you go and what did you do?
Well, first we were in St. Petersburg, and we worked in a home for runaway kids there called Transit. They take kids from the streets of Moscow and bring them here and then try and get them back to their families. And we
The reasons that these kids are running away in Russia similar to the reasons that kids here run away?
No, they all have different reasons. Some of them were similar, but for the most part they were different. Lots of kids just had really bad situations and they just needed to get away. One kid, his house burned down. And he actually, a beam fell on him while he was trying to save his sister. Mm-hmm. And he has a huge scar on his leg. But
they relate
really
to you because you're their
stories.
Age?
Yeah. They told us a good bit about their stories and their backgrounds.
Why would the people running this organization, they're helping these runaways, why would they want three Americans who don't speak Russian? I assume you don't speak Russian.
No.
Das Vidanya.
And who are coming into a situation for maybe a month. Why would they want this? And we have an 8-year-old and a then 14-year-old and a guy.
Well,
want you there?
We contacted them and they really loved our project, and they wanted us to get involved. They're one of the organizations that we're working with now. They want to create a summer camp for the kids, and so we're going to help them build a summer camp in outside of St. Petersburg. But I think to expose these kids to different people as well, I think it was kind of interesting for those kids to meet us and see where we're at. I shared my story with them. I'm an orphan. I had a horrible childhood. I sat down with one kid who was actually in this orphanage. There's an isolation component to it if you're, you know, if the law has brought you in and and things are not going good in your life. There's a separate area of this particular orphanage. And I sat down with some of the kids who were having a really hard time. One kid had just been sent to isolation for sniffing glue, stealing glue and sniffing glue. And I said, you know, I shared my experience with him. I'm a sober man. I came from a horrible childhood. My parents were both dead by the time I was 8 years old. And he and I really connected. And I really feel along the trip that I was able to connect with some kids and maybe plant a seed that might help them in the future. One particular thing, not in Russia, but in Kenya, I met a girl named Ruth. And she was really awkward. And I was an awkward kid. And she showed up. I was writing plays for six different schools in Kenya. And she was awkward and kind of shy and maybe not the most popular kid in this group of kids. And I just sort of focused in on her. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to make a difference in this girl's life. And I sat down with her and I said, you know what? I'm an acting coach from L.A., and great actors are special people. And I said, you've got something incredibly special, Ruth. And she kind of lit up, really shy, but lit up. And the other kids were like, why are you?
Did she know what acting was?
Yeah.
Did she know what L.A. was?
Yeah.
Okay.
They don't all live in the Bronx. I mean, they're fairly educated people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other thing that we learned, funny that you say that, but what we learned about Africa, and I had never been, so I didn't know either. I'm right there with you. These are educated, smart people. They're not all living in huts or in the bush. They're people who get it.
Yeah, it's not just grass huts. There are cities and big schools, and they really want to get an education. They really try hard in school.
But the story behind Ruth is that I spent weeks with her. We wrote plays together. And I just kept instilling this thing like, you're a special kid. You're really cool. I really get you. And this went over and over and over day after day. And we finished the program and we got the opportunity to go and visit some of their schools. And we got to visit Ruth's school. And I'll never forget it. It kind of makes me emotional at times is that we arrived at her school and she came out. And she was like, JD, this is my school. And it was like this different girl. And I thought, you know what? If nothing else on this trip, I feel like I helped one person feel better about themselves. And she and we've been in contact since. And she's kind of our great example of how something simple can change the world.
How did you overcome the language barriers? You talked about working with these Russian young people who you try to influence and inspire, instill in them some sense of hope for the future and a way to get out of the situations that they were in. Why would they listen to you more than they would listen to their Russian adults in their lives? And how did you do it? Because you know, do svidaniya is it?
Specifically in Russia, we had a translator, but it's not too hard when you're working with kids because it's just – you don't need to speak too much of the language. It just kind of
– Well, you can bond with sports.
Understand each other,
and
yeah.
Playing football.
Yeah, exactly.
But still, that's not communicating. That's bonding. That's becoming – you're I'm like you.
Yeah.
It's that kind of a thing.
Jackson got to bond with a boxing ring with the Russian kids.
There was this guy, and he was a pretty big guy. And this was our first day, and we went up to the rec room with some of the kids. And this one guy handed me some boxing gloves, and he was like, here, let's box. And he didn't speak English. I didn't speak Russian. And I was like, sure, why not? And all of a sudden he just starts pounding away, and I'm just sitting here like, oh, ah, wait, I don't box very well.
We got it on videotape too. He just got pounded by the Russian boxer.
He knew what he was doing.
Yeah, right? There was this 1 second before, like, I just saw in his eyes that, like, he was like, oh, this guy's done.
And we might also say that afterwards they hugged, and the kid, they really connected and bonded, and it was a great experience.
Good, we're friends, but.
So that was, you went to Thailand. I got to ask about Thai food, because I love Thai food.
Thai food was great.
It's the best.
It was amazing.
Is it like the food here, or is it different again?
It's different, but it's more similar. But it's out of all the countries I think we went to.
Thai food is wonderful.
Thai
and why is it the best to you, Buck?
Because it's good.
Okay. let me see. Australia does not seem like a country that you would get. Australia is like the United States 30 years ago. So why Australia? Why did you go there?
We worked in the outback with the Royal Flying Doctor Service. They fly out. They have clinics all over the outback in these little towns, and they fly out and give medical service because in the outback there are lots of dangers. Like there are like a ton of deadly spiders and snakes and.
Put the outback into perspective. I think the closest most Americans have come to Australia, the outback, is Survivor, the year that they did Survivor there. So put the outback. What, is there anything like
Big
the outback
and hot.
Here?
Is there, not.
But is there anything like the outback in this country?
Maybe the Southwest.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe the Southwest. But there is nothing like the outback. And it's an extraordinary place. So beautiful. And we had a great experience there, too. We worked with School of the Air, which is a group that it's a school and they actually transmit the lessons by internet out to the outback to the kids. And we were able to do the assembly, which is a 1 week, once a week they do this broadcast and the kids and I got to speak about our trip. And then we went out into the outback and kids recognized us from School of the Air. That was really neat. And we were invited into one person's home in White Cliffs, which is an opal mining town, and it's so hot out there that everyone lives underground, and we stayed.
Literally, everything is underground. The houses, the people who let us into the house, they had a cafe and a little exhibit of like gems and things, and that was underground. Our hotel was underground. All the houses, shops, everything.
So but, they actually dig a hole in the ground, build the house, and cover it back up?
Well, it's more that in this particular area, they build it into, like, the side of hills. Like, they dig through the side of the hill, and, like, there are lights that come in through the ceiling. And
why do they – if it's so hot that they have to do all of those machinations to get their houses and hotels and businesses built, why do they live there?
Because there's opal out there. All the people out there are opal miners.
In fact, the opal miner that we met has
he
the
took
largest
us down.
Pineapple.
Yeah, he had the largest pineapple. And he's just sitting on his desk in his living room.
What's his worth?
It's
a lot. Yeah. And he took the kids and I down into his mine, which was really an amazing experience. We got to go down and the kids got to take a jackhammer and actually mine and get opal out of the...
You're not as big as a jackhammer, Buck. How did you do that?
it was a smaller one for mining.
Small jackhammer, okay. one of the things that you say that you learned about as a result of this trip is that the world, for the most part, is a safe place. And so many people don't travel. I only have a minute here, but because they're afraid. They think they're going to get killed or their family member's going to get abducted or whatever. Talk about that. Why is it such a safe place?
It's really not like that at all.
It isn't. I think for the greatest portion of our trip, we never felt threatened at all. I think, you know, the world is full of people like you and I, and I think for the most part, people are good. And of course, we didn't, you know, go into areas that were extremely dangerous.
But you're American, and people assume that you are rich. And plus, you're a traveling American. Only rich people can travel.
Everyone, not just people who would be potentially hostile. Like everyone thinks Americans are.
We are, in comparison.
I have to take a break. I'm going to follow up on this because I want to find out more about that because not every place is safe.
That's
coming
true.
Right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Sports
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Tyndall Subaru in Gastonia, presenting A Lot to Love at Tyndall Subaru in August with a full line of all-wheel drive Subaru vehicles, including the new 2012 Impreza. Details available at TyndallSubaru.com. Recent accounts of near collisions in the sky, ensuring the safety of air travel as traffic increases and the Federal Aviation Administration transitions to a new control system. That's the topic at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show. And then at 11, the growing demand for air conditioning. We've talked about this in the past on this program. If you'd like to join our conversation with our family of intrepid explorers, the Lewis family, now's your chance. 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or online at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
They say context is everything. At All Things Considered, we take the time to put things in their proper place, delving into the why and the how of a story, not just the who, what, and where. We pinpoint what's truly important and grasp the ideas that bring the news into focus. I'm Melissa Block. Join us every afternoon for All Things Considered from NPR News, because the facts matter.
From 4 to 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to J.D. Lewis and his sons Jackson and Buck. They have just returned from 12 months in 12 countries doing service around the world and learning about other cultures. And one of the people that you interacted with in India has put a comment on our Facebook page, Losang. I guess he's listening. In India. It's astounding to think about that when you think about it.
Shout out to my friends at the Shargadan Monastery, guys.
Yeah. She writes, great family. They were here at our monastery in India and were very helpful and kind. They are a part of our big family now here at Shargadan Monastery, and we hope to see them again soon. Do you have plans
to
go back to these places, some
of
these places that you...
Definitely.
Do you think you can make that happen? Because this is a... I would think that this has been a Herculean feat, what you just did, 12 and 12.
Right. You know, it's funny. People say that a lot, and we, as a family, I guess we don't see it in that respect. I feel like we're just out doing what we do, and I think that we envision our program, 12 and 12, to become bigger and help a lot of people and go out and do more. It's interesting. Shargadan is an interesting location because they were a monastery that did a practice called Dorje Shukin. He's the great Buddhist, by the way. He was the one that shaved his head. They gave him robes, and he lived. Tell him about that a little bit, Buck.
When I got there, one of the head monks there gave me a name, Lapsang Buck, which means pure-minded buck.
Well, first, before we got there, we all shaved our heads before we got to the monastery.
I noticed that, yes, your hair is considerably shorter than it was a year ago.
Yeah. Well, I've cut it a couple times since then.
And you shaved it, why? Before you went to the monastery, why did you shave it?
We were in McLeod. We were in McLeod Ganj with the Dalai Lama, and we decided.
Yeah.
We got to see the Dalai Lama speak for 4 days in his hometown.
It's kind of weird. I've never had my hair that short before.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah. You reach up there, and there's nothing there.
Yeah, it was like,
yeah,
it's cool.
But it grows back. It grows back. So you are the prayerful buck. Is that what he called you?
Prayer-minded.
Why did he call you that?
I don't know. Actually, I don't know. And then another monk said he'll give me robes, and I still have them.
And I think, was it here that you also worked in a cafe?
Yeah.
It was in India.
In India?
McLeod Ganj, I worked in a cafe.
We talked a little bit about getting to McLeod Ganj the last time you were by phone, and it was not a great connection from Tanzania, but we talked a little bit about going up the mountainside. You got there very late at night, 3 o'clock in the morning, and you went up this very steep mountain with very narrow roads that you really couldn't see.
Right.
Took your life into your hands, and then you walked.
We were in a tiny car, and the road was about an inch wider than the tire.
Who drove?
On the side. Just a driver. He had driven us from Delhi.
So you could have died.
All day.
We could have. And when we say an inch,
it was pitch dark, and that was
it was truly it that. Was and not, the fall off on the cliff was too
and,
like
and
death,
it wasn't
truly.
Smooth or paved. It was a bumpy dirt road with rocks, and we went through two little streams actually trying to get up there. And then we had to go over a bridge. We And the bridge is, you go over this little hill, and then you have to go down and right onto the bridge. And the bridge wasn't any wider than the road, so, and there's no railing on the sides.
We've learned that America has great safety regulations that the rest of the world does not have.
And you woke up, because you got there at 3 o'clock in the morning, you woke up the next morning and opened the window. And you looked out, and
the house we were staying at, you could just see like the entire like valley with the town, and just it was beautiful.
People took to you in India, Buck.
They did.
People liked you in India.
Yes.
Understand it?
Yeah, somewhat.
Is it just your effervescent personality, or is it the fact that your hair is slightly lighter? Like, what was the deal there? What was the deal?
No, actually. And
did they not like you? Did they not take to you?
No. They liked him as well. Yeah.
But I have to say, Buck had that sort of great ambassador energy.
Yeah, you call him the great ambassador. Why?
He was, because in every situation, he was the first to jump in.
Yeah, he was great with that. Like, he was, once we got somewhere, he was immediately jumping out, saying hi. Like, within 10 minutes of being in South America, he was speaking Spanish. It was
Which was amazing.
Yeah. Truly.
What does that mean?
When they clean my room, I can't find anything, and I don't remember what the second thing.
That was from my school book in high school, but he's learned some other great stuff. But he really has a way of walking into situations and being able to communicate with people, especially in the places that we weren't able to really speak the language.
Well, you called India a place that truly changed your life. And your father wrote this, and he wrote it about your lives, too. He said it truly changed your lives as well.
It was definitely...
In what way?
It was just... It's kind of hard to see sometimes. It's just the level of poverty in some of these places. And then right next to our... these amazing, beautiful places. It was just...
Taj Mahal.
Yeah, and then working with the actual people there, like at the monastery, and we worked with refugees actually in northern India from Tibet. They walked for a whole month from Tibet to get to India just to escape. One guy that I talked to a lot, he had been arrested for 5 years just for carrying the flag through his town, and then when he got out, walked for... over a month to get to India from his hometown. Mm. It was
in Buenos Aires, Argentina. You spent time working with homeless kids there in a homeless shelter, and you met a little boy that you adopted. His name was Brian. And you said that you believe that Brian will grow up, despite his circumstances, to do great things. That was back in March. Why did you feel that way about Brian, and have you been in contact with him since March?
You better take this one back because I get a little...
Well, he was just an amazing kid. Like, he was so happy and he had so much energy. He just seemed like a great kid. And I spent a lot of time with him. Like, the moment we were there, he came over and jumped on me. And every morning he came up and said hi and hugged me and was jumping on me. And it was...
Why?
I don't know. He kind of like adopted me as his brother, I guess. He was
an extraordinary
kid, yeah.
Child who, the minute we arrived at the homeless shelter, he just came up to us like he knew us. And we sort of took him under our wing. And each day that we arrived and saw him, he would run up to us. And one of the toughest parts of...
is leaving. It was...
But that was...
You know, I want to talk about that for a second, because you really get emotionally involved in the places that you go in these. You have to. You'd be inhuman if you didn't become emotional about the people and the places that you worked in and the kind of work that you were doing in these places around the world. And the closest thing that normal people who don't do these things can probably relate this to is summer camp. And I know that I worked for a stage show every summer when I was your age, Jackson, in Atlantic City on the Steel Pier, and we had two casts that came in every week, and they performed for the week, and then on Sunday a new cast would come in. But I stayed for the summer, and every Saturday was wrenching for me because I'd made these fast lifetime friends. Because, you know, you're 14, 15, 16 years old, and everything is heightened. And the Saturday when everybody would leave was like horrible. And then the next day, these new people would be there. You didn't know them, and you had no connection with them. But the same thing would happen again the next Saturday. It must have been even worse for you. You were there for a month doing really important things.
Yeah, it was definitely hard, specifically in some of the places where we knew there was probably a chance we weren't going to see them again. Like some of the orphanages, the kids are going to be adopted by the time we get to go there again. Uh-huh. And it's definitely hard saying goodbye anyway, just because we've spent so much time and had so many experiences with these people. And
it was truly the toughest part of the trip. And, you know, we spent a lot of – it was interesting. In each location, it was the same thing. We arrived a little intimidated. Within a day, we were friends. Within a week, we were family. And then we spent a month with them. And then in each location, it was – the goodbyes was – were really difficult. Yeah. Especially China was, and it was
China
one of our first
really
locations.
Hard.
Jackson and I just sobbed from, we were about an hour outside of Beijing. We just sobbed all the way to Beijing. It was just one of those.
Well, you said about China and your work in China that when you are in the midst of work like this, your life changes forever. And you wrote that in a blog while you were there. And I'm just curious, now with the distance of time, is that more than hyperbole?
Our lives are forever changed. I'm in every location. China was just really amazing because the kids were all special needs kids, and a lot of them are having a difficult time being adopted, and they're just such great kids. I wanted to take them
all home.
Yeah,
they're amazing.
And you can't help but be a different person when you leave. I'm such a fan of what we call, and I did not coin the phrase, but voluntourism, of people going out on vacations, seeing the world from the viewpoint of how these people live. Yeah. It's just incredible.
In a post that your father wrote, because I think he did most of the blogging.
No, he did.
Did
he had his own blog.
I had my blog going.
Oh, see, I wasn't given that. I didn't have...
I have a separate website.
It's linked to our
website.
There's
a link to it under my biography on the main website.
I had it on paper. I didn't know. anyway, I understand that your visit to the Holocaust Museum in Berlin and the Genocide Museum in Kigali, Rwanda, had a really profound effect on you. Do you understand why it had such an effect on you?
Yeah, well, first of all, the Holocaust Museum in Berlin, that first of all, it's a really intense museum to go through anyway, but I have an adopted grandmother who is in one of the camps and who went through all of that, so that was, it was just hard to think about that she actually went through that. Mm-hmm. And then the genocide memorial in Rwanda, we had just spent a whole month working and living with kids who had lost their parents to the genocide and who had lived through that and been through all that, and it would have been hard to go through anyway without having that personal connection with so many people who had been through it. It was really hard.
The best thing that you did while you were gone, Buck, what was the best experience that you personally had?
The best experience I'm going to have to say is the Elephant Nature Park.
The Elephant Nature Park?
Yeah, in Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
And
what did you do there? You scrubbed elephants in the water? What did you do there?
The first day we fed them, and then you like have different tasks starting from the morning. It's just you work all day. It's so fun, and you also get to use the machete.
Not on people. I want you to preface that as a not
in the kitchen with the fruit. It wasn't
best thing for you.
That's a really hard choice because everywhere was amazing, but I'm gonna narrow it down to my top three. I'm going to say New Hope in Beijing.
New Hope is what?
New Hope Foundation, the orphanage for the special needs children. Mm-hmm. And the school in Tanzania that we worked at, I ran the preschool program there.
Ran the preschool program?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was great. It was great. I had a great time, and the kids were fun. And there was actually a fair while we were there, and we set up game booths and had all these games. Like, we set up bottles on a table and there were bean bags at it. And mm-hmm. It was fun. And then Argentina, working with the homeless shelter in Buenos Aires, and then we also got to work with the monkeys at the Refugio de Manos.
These are the howling monkeys?
Yeah, the howler monkeys.
I understand that you met somebody there. Is that true?
I'm in trouble.
Oh, jeez. You're in trouble.
A young lady.
But she's just a friend. The woman who owns the monkey refuge has two daughters, and we all just became really close. We're like family.
There's a joke in there somewhere, but we won't tell it. Dennis from Morrisville writes, "This show reminds me of words my dad passed on to me. He said to simply ask yourself, how much is enough? I think your guests definitely get the deep meaning of this simple question." Myron writes, "Living in America, we are often told that what should make us happy and often buy into this notion. I'd be interested to learn from your guest what things or experiences the third world has that makes them happy that the first world may be missing." We talked a little bit about this already, just the living in the moment.
Sense of community, definitely a sense of community. And a sense of, you know, they appreciate simple things like food is a big deal around the world. And because there's such a lack of it,
they really enjoy
their
meals. Yeah,
they do. There's a real love of food. There's a love of music. There's a love of, you know, dance.
Mm. What was the best food you had that you had never had before you left on the trip, Buck? Mm.
What was the stuff called in Russia that was the gooey pretzel thing?
Was it yak yak?
Yak yak.
Yak yak.
I like ugali.
What is ugali?
Ugali.
It's like a bread mixed with rice thingy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that was in Kenya. It's kind of like a doughy kind of rice. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure what it is.
How do you think you were changed? Because I have a minute left. How do you think you were changed by this experience? You're the oldest son.
I definitely want to do more humanitarian work now that I've done it, and I'm definitely going back to these places. I definitely have a good appreciation of what we have now, and definitely I have a better understanding of cultures and the world. And
Buck, how has it changed your life?
That I really respect what I have now. It's like before I left, I used to get everything, and now...
You used to get everything?
I did.
What do you mean?
Never mind.
That is not true, ladies and gentlemen. And my child did not get everything.
Yes, he did.
One of the rewards that you said, JD, of this trip for you, JD, was that you were able to experience your kids as compassionate, brave men.
That is the greatest gift a parent could have.
What a nice comment. And what a nice comment to hear from your father. J.D. Lewis, Jackson, and Buck, thanks for the hour.
Thank you.
Thank you.